Hello. Well, I was listening to Kate, and I'm not quite prepared. It's like, oh yeah, me. The only thing I'm not prepared with is a song, and I like to start with a song. So I'm going to pull up YouTube real quick and kind of roll the dice through my inspirational playlist and see what I come up with. But usually I'm a little more prepared. I was just totally into listening to Kate. So let's see what we got here. Ah, this sounds nice. It's called You Take My Breath Away, and it's sung by Eva Cassidy. So why don't we listen to this song as kind of our stillness break, and then we'll get into the seven steps to awakening.
Sometimes it amazes me how strong the power of love can be. Sometimes you just take my breath away. You watch my love grow like a child. Sometimes gentle and sometimes wild. Sometimes you just take my breath away. And it's too good to slip by, too good to lose, too good to be there, just to stand up on a mountain top and tell the news that you take my
was beautiful, huh? I think it's okay that I wasn't prepared. It worked out, didn't it? Yeah, and for those of you who didn't catch it, that was Eva Cassidy, You Take My Breath Away. All right. Also, I will tell you all that I broke down today and got YouTube Red, which is like $9.99 a month. And I did that because I'm listening to more and more YouTube, especially music, but not just music, you know, for inspiration. And it just seemed nice to get rid of the commercials. So I broke down and did that today. all right, so last week in the Seven Steps to Awakening, we were looking at, quote, 760, and in fact, we got into a discussion about some things, and we never even went to my journal entry. We never even made it that far. So that means that today we're beginning still with, quote, 760. So when I read this quote, if it sounds familiar, that's why. It's the same quote we looked at last week. This is the quote. They, and remember last week we said that they is human beings. In fact, we'll go back again to quote 759 just to give us the context for quote 760. 759 says, human beings are narrow-minded and petty-minded, interested in the trivia of life. They spend most of their time in pursuit of evil desires. And so 760 continues off of that. They are tempted away from the path of order and wisdom by their own vanities and desires. They are tempted away from the path of order and wisdom by their own vanities and desires. And this is what led to our discussion last week, which was really around the idea of, there were two ideas presented. One was about, you know, feelings about, you know, maybe I'm being told by a spiritual teacher that I need to be engaged in more spiritual practice than I am. And maybe sometimes I'm even feeling that somehow I'm being told that I am not good enough to awaken in this lifetime especially. And then there was the opposite side. What about the teachers who say that we don't need to practice, that there's nothing to do? And that's where our discussion went last week. And you can see how this quote would have led to that discussion. They are tempted away from the path of order and wisdom by their own vanities and desires. Because what this quote seems to be pointing to is that there is a path that we need to consciously stay on. And so there were some questions about that last week. Is it true that there's a path I need to consciously stay on? You know, do I have a hope of awakening? And I'm not going to go back over all of that because that's what we talked about last week. So if anyone wasn't here last week and that sounds interesting to you, you can go back and listen to last week's audio. You can find it on reginadawnacres.com under audios, Seven Steps to Awakening. And then we're on the second page, I believe it is. It might be the third page of Step 3, whatever the most recent page of Step 3 is. That's where we're at, and you'll find the audio there. I just want to say, and I said this last week, but I'm just going to say it again. You know, I need to leave everyone up to their own guidance, to whatever feels right for you. It doesn't make sense to me to ask anyone to do anything that doesn't feel right to them. Even if we're making mistakes, I think it's better to come to those mistakes and learn from those mistakes by following our own way than to have made a mistake because we went against our intuition by listening to someone else, right? That's somehow like, oh man, I knew better. So I think we should each follow our own way. But for me, there's a definite truth to this quote, that we can be distracted away from the path of awakening, and that there is a wisdom in not permitting ourselves to be distracted. That seems genuine to me. Reminds me very much of in the Bible when Jesus talked about how wide is the path to destruction, right? And narrow is the path to, I don't know if he said life or the kingdom of God, you know, but narrow is the path to life and wide is the path to destruction. And I think this quote in its own way is really just saying the same thing. And in fact, that's the way I experience it. I experience that if I really pay attention to the teachers who seem to be the great masters, that they have their own way of speaking, but they all have the same teaching. And so I personally don't find a confusion in the teaching, because I do my best to listen to the great masters, right? Not just every person who comes by with some clarity. And so again, the quote that we have here, they are tempted away from the path of order and wisdom by their own vanities and desires. And vanities we talked about last week are I thinking, right? Me thinking. Mine thinking is also included. So it may not feel like a vanity. You know, we talked about that song, You're So Vain. You probably think the song is about you, right? It doesn't have to feel like vanity. It doesn't have to feel like that, oh, I love myself so much. I'm so gorgeous. I'm so smart. It could feel like, oh, I hate myself so much. I'm so ugly. I'm so dumb, right? And we don't tend to call that vanity, but yet that's still I thinking or me thinking. And so that's a vanity. So any I thinking or me thinking, when we get all caught up in that thinking, all caught up in believing that thinking, all caught up to and reacting to that thinking or being a slave to that thinking, we are straying away from the narrow path to life and walking that wide path to destruction, to use Jesus's language. And of course, desires are the same thing. Desire for anything other than truth, or other than know thyself, or other than awakening, right? You know, really having, other desires that are driving us. You know, it could be a desire, as we know, for a particular quality of relationship with another person. You know, it could be that desire for that sense of financial security. It could be the desire to, you know that our children are perfectly safe forever and ever, and I never have to worry about them again, right? I mean, there's just a whole host of desires that distract us from the narrow path to life. They distract us from the singular thought of God or the singular desire for truth, right? So to me, this quote is just stating something that's simply true. You know, human beings are tempted away from the path of order and wisdom by their own vanities and desires. That's it. It's just the way it is. And right now, although this isn't ultimately true, right now I'm going to put myself in the class of human beings. Right? I'm not a dog, I'm not a bird, I'm not a tree at this particular moment in time and experience. I'm a human being. So what this says to me is that if truth realization is important to me, I want to watch myself for those temptations because I am a human being. You know, Jamie, her primary temptations are what? Food and walking. You know, she'll forget anything if I say the word, you know, snack or walk, right? Whatever she was doing, she forgets about it. Instantly she's focused on it. You know, and there are certain things that can do that to me too. There are certain things that can distract me, cause me to forget my purpose. You know, one of the things that I really watch, and I've been watching for years, so it's a big one for me, is the thought that I'm too busy. If I buy into the thought that I am too busy, I will cut short my spirit, my focused spiritual practice and meditation time, you know, that special time in the morning with God. I will cut it short because I have so many things to do. So regardless of how long this to-do list is, regardless of how long my emails are, I have to realize that's not a true thought. That's only a distraction thought. And that whatever I get done today is absolutely perfect. And the most important thing that I'm doing is what I call that special spiritual practice time in the morning. And the reason I call it that special spiritual practice time in the morning is there are types of spiritual practice that go with me throughout the day. Even when I walk away from my purple sofa and I'm now, you know, working or being with family or whatever. There are certain types of spiritual practice that go with me. But there's this special time in the morning that's very focused and very alone. Very alone time, just me and truth, me and God, right? Me and my inner calling. And that is the most important thing I do. In fact, once upon a time, I was a corporate trainer. Some of you may know that. And one of the types of classes that I taught was time management. And in time management, we taught something called big rocks. Some of you might know about big rocks, but for those of you who don't, I'll talk about it. Big rocks. What happens, and maybe someday I'll just share this video with you. Maybe we'll look at it as part of the Gentle Healing group, if I remember. But what happens when you're teaching someone big rocks is you get a jar. And what you do is you pour sand into that jar and you say, you know, this sand represents some of the things that we like to do with our time, you know, like playing on Facebook or playing games, you know, on our phone or our computer or watching TV or, reading, you know, meaningless, you know, I'll say for now, trashy novels, just things like that. Things that aren't overly productive, but, you know, it's kind of how we relax. That's what the sand represents. And then I put in some little rocks. And the little rocks represent things that are a little more important, you know, but maybe they aren't overly critically important. I guess it would depend, on each person's life as to what those things are. But in my life, that might be, you know, cleaning the garage is not overly important. I don't need to keep my garage super clean. Even cleaning my car, you know, is not overly important to me. What else is not overly important? Well, believe it or not, doing laundry, because I have lots of clothes. I don't have to do laundry on a daily basis. Maybe every couple weeks I need to. But, you know, doing laundry is not overly important. You know, keeping my house so clean that you can eat off the corners of the, you know, of the floor, that's not overly important. So these are the little rocks. If I spend my time doing these things, cleaning the garage, cleaning the house, cleaning the car, doing laundry, if I spend all of my time doing that, that's like putting the little rocks in. The big rocks are the things that are really important. You know, and the big rocks obviously are spiritual practice. You know, another big rock might be spending time with family, right? Jamie thinks definitely a big rock is walking her every day. But if I fill the jar with the sand, right, with Facebook and games and TV and, you know, meaningless novels. And then I spend too much time cleaning my house and cleaning my car and doing laundry, more time than is necessary. There's not room left in the jar. The jar is filled with sand and little rocks. There's not room in the jar for the big rocks, which means what gets squeezed out of my life are the most important things. And in fact, Jesus, in his own way, told a big rock story in the Bible. Some of you guys may remember this. It was when he was at Lazarus's house. This isn't This isn't the time, the famous time when Lazarus died and he raised him from the dead. This was another time. He was at Lazarus's house and he was teaching. And mostly there were, according to the story, men listening to him. But Lazarus had two sisters, Mary and Martha. And typically, you know, the women, of course, would prepare meals for the men, right? That's what they did back then. And so Martha's in the kitchen trying to get food for Jesus and these disciples he's brought and these other men that came because he was there. And Mary is in the other room with the men sitting at the feet of Jesus and listening to Jesus speak. And Martha gets really frustrated because Mary is leaving her to do all of this work by herself. So finally, of course, she says something. And Jesus says that Mary is the one that made the right decision. That Martha was mistaken, right? Cooking the food for all of the men was at best a little rock. But Mary, sitting at the feet of Jesus and listening to the teaching, that was the big rock. She had her priorities correct. So when we're teaching big rocks in time management, what we do again is we get this big jar and, you know, we go through this spiel that I just went through with y'all, and we put the sand in and we put the little rocks in, and then we show how there's not any room for the big rocks. The big rocks got squeezed out of our life. And then we get another jar. And we say, so what you need to do is, first of all, you need to determine what your big rocks are. Right? What are your big rocks? And the way I used to say that when I was teaching is I would say, when you're laying on your deathbed at age 82, I picked 82 out of that. When you're laying on your deathbed at age 82, what are you going to wish you'd spent more time doing? You know, look at that. That's your big rocks. Probably not cleaning the garage, right? Probably not playing on Facebook, right? You know, so what are your big rocks? What do you wish you had spent more time doing in your life? And you take those big rocks and you put them in the jar first. So you know they fit. They're in there first. And then you fill up the spaces all the way around the big rocks with the little rocks. You know, the cleaning of the garage and mopping the floor and doing the laundry and all of that, right? And then you pour the sand in. And the sand, you know, there's still room for some sand, believe it or not. The sand kind of fills in the spaces between all of the rocks. There was space filled there. But kind of everything fits if you put the big rocks in first. So the trick is to determine what your big rocks are and make sure you put them in your life first and let everything else wait. No matter how much the mind may be screaming that you need, you know, my office hasn't been dusted, God knows how long, maybe a couple of months. But you know what? Nobody goes in my office but me. I dust upstairs, you know, where other people cohabitate with me. I dust up there. But, you know, what's some dust going to hurt? I mean, every now and then I dust my office, but it's just not a big rock. I mean, dust or meditate? Should I cut my meditation short to dust my office? What's it matter? When I'm laying on my deathbed at age 82 or whatever, am I going to say, dang it, I wish I had spent more time dusting my office? What does it matter? But the spiritual practice is a big rock. In fact, I put the spiritual practice above everything, and my beloved family knows this. Again, they get their time with me. There is time that is reserved for my family, and when I'm with my family, I give them 100% of my attention. But my quiet time alone with God comes first. And to me, that's really what this is saying we don't do. This is saying we do not put the big rocks in the jar first. Human beings are tempted away from the path of order and wisdom by their own vanities and desires, by the sand and the little rocks. And if we don't put God first, truth first, spiritual practice first, if we don't put all of that first, why? Why would we expect the benefit, I don't know what to call this, the effect? Why would we expect the effect to occur if we haven't cared enough to make it a priority in our life? I mean, if you think of it this way, you know, using the language of A Course in Miracles, you are the free Son of God. Think about how powerful that is for a moment. Think about what the Son of God is and how powerful it is to be the Son of God. Whether you believe yourself to be that or not, just for a moment, what if I am the Son of God? How powerful would I be? And then, think of your attention. Your attention, whatever you place your attention on, that is what you are giving value to. And whatever you give value to, you, as the powerful Son of God, are saying, this is what I want more of. And then imagine that you, the powerful Son of God, spend 2.5 at least hours a day laying on the sofa, reading Facebook, and having whatever judgment thoughts you do about what different people put in Facebook. What are you asking for? Are you asking for truth? Are you asking for awakening? And so why should you be surprised if it doesn't occur, if it doesn't seem to be happening for you, if you aren't noticing progress in that area? Why should you be surprised? If you are that powerful Son of God that we say you are, and if you what you want to become, I'm going to use the word manifest for a moment, even though it isn't wholly true, but if what you want to become manifest in your life is the experience of your reality, knowing your truth beyond all doubt, if that's what you want, then where are you going to place your attention? What's your big rock? You see, that's all this quote is saying. And of course, most human beings, and this is, you know, this is not any big surprise, most human beings do not place spiritual awakening at the top of their priority list. Many, many other things get their attention. And that's all this quote is saying. The question for me is, what do I want? I mean, all of the other human beings are allowed to do whatever they want to do, and God bless them. You know, while I'm down here meditating in the morning, I think my boyfriend's upstairs playing Sudoku on his iPad, and God bless him. It's so sweet that he sits there and plays Sudoku for 1.5 hours or 2 hours while I sit down here and meditate, don't you think? He's allowed to do whatever he wants to do, but I need to determine what I want to do with this power that I have. Human beings are tempted away from the path of order and wisdom by their own vanities and desires. Why don't we go look and see what I wrote in my journal? Okay, I wrote this on October 6, 2013. I am kept from God by my own ignorant and confused thoughts. I am kept from God by my own ignorant and confused thoughts. Yet, I am not ignorance or confusion. Why should I let these thoughts detain me? Again, I am kept from God by my own ignorant and confused thoughts. Yet I am not ignorance or confusion. Why should I let these thoughts detain me? And I will tell you that I know from the date that at that time in my life, although apparently I was doing some writing with the Seven Steps to Awakening, because here we go, we have something that I wrote with the Seven Steps right here. I know that in the fall of 2013, I was not spending a significant amount of time every day with God. My experience at the time was, this was the first year of Awakening Together. In fact, Awakening Together actually began on July 21st, 2013. And the member board of trustees was still building Awakening Together. Remember, we had a kind of an assignment to get church status, and there were lots of policies that needed to be written. I was writing the minister preparation program, and, you know, I think I was adminning at the time. I was also an admin, as well as doing my teachings, and, you know, I was just busy, 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 and I was putting at least the small rocks in the jar first. I don't know that I can say I was putting the sand in, but I was putting the small rocks in the jar first, and there wasn't room for my big rock. It didn't appear to me, you know, and if you put your small rocks in the jar first, there isn't room for the big rocks. There wasn't room for my big rocks, and I could feel the tension and the stress that at an earlier time in my life I had not felt. And the difference was that at an earlier time in my life, I was putting the big rocks in the jar first. You know, prior to the beginning of Awakening Together, you know, it appeared that I had fewer things to do and therefore more time. And so I was very naturally putting the big rocks in first. And there was a peacefulness that went with me throughout my day. But when I began to get up and start working on policies most days, instead of spending time with God first, this stress entered back into my life. And so, you know, just like we always do in our journals, I'm talking to myself here. You know, I'm contemplating this quote and I'm noticing that I am kept from God by my own ignorant and confused thoughts. By these ideas that, you know, it's more important to get up and write a policy in the morning. And yet, I know I'm not ignorance or confusion. So why am I listening to these thoughts? You know, I know better. Why am I creating this stress for myself? I know better. And it did take some, I mean, it wasn't right away. It was many months before I finally got back to putting God first. And I want to tell you guys something that's very, very important. Very important, what I'm about to say. You know, the idea in the mind was, when things slow down enough, I'll be able to put my contemplation and meditation time back in my life. Things never slowed down enough. To this day, my to-do list is just as long. And to this day, I could get up and I could work from the time I got out of bed. I could start on work at 5 in the morning. I could work from 5 in the morning till 8 at night. And the list would just keep coming. I would never catch up. And I would always feel that sense of lack from not having put God first. The only thing that changed is that I decided, if you'll pardon the expression, to hell with it, I'm putting God first anyway. That's the only thing that changed. God comes first, then I go to work. What gets done today gets done. What doesn't get done doesn't get done. But God's first, right? And it is also important. I mean, I would say the things on this to-do list, these are little rocks. And it is important to put the little rocks in the jar before the sand. Right? Big rocks first, little rocks second, sand last. So I get up and I spend time with God. And I can spend a significant amount of time with God now. On an average day, 4 to 5 hours before I begin work, before I take a shower, 4 to 5 hours. On weekends, a little less because the family is waiting. So on weekends, it's closer to an hour, maybe 2 hours sometimes, depending on what we're doing. But during the week, 4 to 5 hours. I do get up at 5 a.m., so we're talking by 9 or 10, somewhere in that range. I'm feeling finished, and I'm getting up and getting showered and getting to work. And then I work, from that time period then, so from 9:30 or 9:30 to 10:30, somewhere around there, I begin work, and I work until usually 8 at night. There's still plenty of time for work. And when I look at my to-do list, I look and see, what's important to be done today. So the biggest of the little rocks I do first, right? Some things can wait till another day later in the week. Some things can maybe wait till next week or the week after. I keep them on the list so they're not forgotten, but it's okay if they don't get done today. I look at the list. In fact, what I do, I have a highlighter here. And what I do when I get down to my office in the morning is I look at the list. And I select the things that really should be focused on today, and I highlight them. And depending on, whether they're things that take short time duration or long time duration, I try to highlight the appropriate number of things, things I can probably really get to today. And then as I do something, I cross it off the list. Right? So I'm really following the big rocks rule. I'm doing the big rocks first. And then the little rocks, but I'm doing the biggest of the little rocks first, right? And everything just seems, everything just seems to, even though never is everything done, never is everything done. Never will you come in my office and find an empty to-do list and a clear calendar and an empty inbox. Never. Never is everything done. At the same time, everything's done. You don't find people chasing after Regina. Regina, you didn't get this to me. Regina, you didn't do that. Regina, you never do this. Regina, you just don't find that. Like, everything somehow gets done. It gets managed. But God comes first. Truth comes first. All right, so I think that we're done with that. I think we're done with that. So I think we will move on. Oh, wait, Andy has posted in the room from ACIM Workbook Lesson 79, which we all did recently. The temptation to regard problems as many is the temptation to keep the problem of separation unsolved. Yeah, and I do get up at 5 in the morning now, but I will tell you all that, back in the day when I had a corporate job and a daughter and all of that, and I was starting the spiritual path, 5 in the morning would have been too late. If I had gotten up at 5 in the morning then, I still would not have had my time with God, or at least not enough of it. So back then, when I needed to, I got up at 4. I got up at 4 in the morning because that's what my life then required of me. Back then I needed to be done with that God time and starting to get focused on getting Jasmine up and her ready for school and me ready for work. I needed to start doing all of that around 6. And 1 hour with God was not enough. I knew that. I needed 2 hours with God, so I would get up at 4. And that way I had 4 to 6 with God before the day hit. It's just a matter of what's important to you. What are your big rocks? You know, maybe depending on who you are and what your life is like, maybe that lunchtime. But I used to use my lunchtime that way. I used to go out into my car and sit and with the course in my car at lunch, at least on many days. I wouldn't say every day, but on many days. I remember going out in my car and sitting in the car at lunch with the course, instead of sitting in the cafeteria with everybody else chatting about whatever we chatted about, most likely sand, you know, most likely sand. All right, so let's just go on to 761. Let's have a peek at 761. By the way, I don't think I remembered to give you all the link to the journal, so let me just do that right now. This is the link to the journal for 761. Among human beings, there are liberated ones, but they are extremely rare. Now, this is funny to me. Because, you know, this sentence by itself, I think, could be taken completely out of context. You know, we could go back to the, oh no, I'm not good enough, I'm never going to wake up thought, right? Among human beings, there are liberated ones, but they are extremely rare. However, we don't have to take this out of context. Because we just read 760. We just spent an hour last week and nearly 45 minutes this week on 760. And now we know why liberation is extremely rare. It's not because I'm not good enough, you're not good enough, right? It's not that. It's that we allow ourselves to be distracted from the path of order and wisdom by our vanities and desires. That's why liberation is extremely rare. Which means, again, if liberation is what I want, I don't have to make that mistake anymore. I don't have to make that mistake anymore of not giving my time and attention to that pursuit. Yeah, Jay is talking about tasty sandwiches. You know, he's remembering a story that Michael Langford told, and I shared this story with you all once upon a time. It's probably been a couple years ago in a weekly gathering. But in that story, Michael was talking about how one of the teachers he used to go and see was Jay Krishnamurti. And he said that, you know, prior to Jay Krishnamurti arriving, you know, the room, and I don't know how many people are in the room, you know, I'll say around 1,000 people are in the room. They're all in the room, and they're chatting, and they're talking. And, you know, when Krishnamurti would walk on stage, everybody would get quiet, you know, and they'd listen. And, of course, Michael would be there, and he said he used to like to get there early so he could be, you know, up on the front row, right? So he'd be there, and, of course, he'd listen with everyone else. And let's say Krishnamurti talks for an hour, maybe he talks for 2 hours, and everybody's listening. But then when Krishnamurti is done talking, Michael said that what they would do is they would sometimes have sandwiches, I think he said, there. They would have sandwiches there that they served. And so when it was done, when Krishnamurti finished talking, immediately when he finished talking, everybody else would start chatting. And in fact, they went right back to what I just now called the sand. They weren't chatting about what did Krishnamurti just say. They just went back to their normal chatting, right? They went right back to the sand immediately after Krishnamurti stopped and went outside to get the sandwiches, the tasty sandwiches. Michael said he would be like the only one out of 1,000 people. Imagine this. The only one who would stay in the auditorium with his eyes closed and contemplate, what did Krishnamurti just say? and contemplate it. And, you know, you could just feel it, bring it in deeper and deeper and deeper so that it would not be forgotten by Michael. And when he told that story, one of the sentences in the story was, you know, to all of the rest of the humans, the tasty sandwiches, you know, were more important. So that's why Jay is saying tasty sandwiches and pies, right? The sand. I mean, compared to awakening, a tasty sandwich is sand. I mean, sure, we have to eat, but we could spend 30 minutes at least contemplating what was just said after being with a great master before we go and grab a sandwich, don't you think? Which comes first, the big rock or the sand? So yeah, this next quote says, among human beings, there are liberated ones. Yay! Among human beings, there are liberated ones, but they are extremely rare. Now again, some of you, because you know, you've told me this, so I know that some of you have felt, you know, when you hear that it's, you know, that the truly liberated ones are extremely rare, again, there's this frustration, this message that, you know, I'm not going to make it. That's not what I hear. What I hear is, if you want to make it, this must be a priority for you. That's what I hear. I perceive it as a positive message. You know, if God was, if God was that imaginary human being with the long white beard sitting on a throne, and I crawled up to God on my hands and my knees, and I said, God, please, just tell me the most important thing I need to know. What God is saying is, you must make truth your priority, or you will not realize truth. I say, thank you, God. And I walk away and I make truth a priority. To me, this is simple. It's also very simple to see that most human beings don't do that. So it's very easy to see why most human beings are not liberated. But I'm not most human beings. I'm, you know, just this one that gets to make the choices for just this one. It doesn't matter. In fact, I think I told you this recently, but I have right here on the bulletin board next to my desk a bookmark that Michael Langford gave to me last year when I visited him. And it says, are you ready? Become loyal to your innermost truth. Follow the way when all others abandon it. Walk the path of your own heart. But right now I want to focus on that middle sentence. Follow the way when all others abandon it. You see, I'm not most human beings, by the way, nor are you. I'm the one who can choose to follow the way when all others abandon it. I used to have a friend a long time ago named Palkyung. Palkyung is a Buddhist nun. And she and I made a promise to each other. The promise that we made to each other is that we would each walk this path of awakening to the best of our ability, even if no one else did. Our promise to each other was that we would each walk this path of awakening to the best of our ability, even if no one
else did.
You see, we don't have to choose to be the crowd. Kathy says, how is she doing? I haven't spoken to Pelkyung in many, many years. Probably not since 2008, so probably 9 years. Yeah, I think the last time I saw Pelkyung was one of the two people who came to my house to help me validate NTI before sending it to the publisher. And I think that's the last time I saw her. So that would have been in late 2007, probably. So it's been a long time. So the point is, again, we now know why few people are liberated. And by liberated here, now remember, there are shifts that occur on the way to total liberation. And there are people who experience those shifts, and often those shifts are called awakenings. Right? So people experience, you know, these different shifts, and they have these experiences that are dramatically different than previous experiences, and they call them awakenings. But remember, when we're talking about liberation, we're talking about the total end to the ego. It has some other lovely terms like mind death, anunasa. But the total end to the ego, total end to the ego, total end to the ego. And anybody who has any ounce of honesty can look and notice whether there's been a total end to the ego. You know, so you might say, oh yes, there are many shifts. My experience is dramatically different than it used to be. I mean, certainly compared to my previous self and most of the population on the planet Earth, I am awake. And yet, there is not yet a total end to the ego. That would mean the liberation has not yet occurred. Right? So when we are talking about liberation, and we're saying that liberated ones are extremely rare, we're talking about ones, you know, where there has been a total end to the ego. All right? So first of all, let's get clear on that. But again, now we know why the liberated ones are extremely rare. And it was, quote, 760. Because human beings are tempted away from the path of order and wisdom by their own vanities and desires. And we also know that not one of us has to be like the others. If anyone has ever become fully liberated, ended the ego, that means it's possible for each and every one of us. We just have to make that a priority. That has to be genuinely what our life is about. That's all. I have two songs in my head now. Which one do I play when two songs are singing, both of which are supporting this message? I'm going to sing the one that's feeling closest and play the one that's feeling closest. And then if there's time for the other, I will do it too. This is a song that you've heard before. It's by Stephen Walters. It's called Nothing Less Than Everything. Because, again, this has to be the most important priority, which means to a point we give everything else up. It doesn't mean those other things don't still occur, but they just can't have the same position of value in our life as this biggest rock, this purpose of awakening to truth. So let's listen to Stephen Walters. No commercials, because I have YouTube Red.
I was walking down a lonely road, looking for a place to rest. There was no escaping from this ache inside my chest. Then I got down on my knees and begged for mercy, and I raised up my hands. And I knew the answer, even as I asked the question of just how much this love demands. And it's everything, nothing less than everything will do. And when everything is burnt, I will take these ashes and offer them up to you. Shiva, Shiva, Mahadeva, Mahadeva. Shiva, Shiva, Mahadeva, Mahadeva. I was walking down.
And I'm going to turn that down because he's just going to repeat himself now. He does the exact same verse twice in the song. So I'm going to move on to the other song that was playing in my head. But I love that song, that this love requires nothing less than everything. And when everything is turned to ashes, you know, including this self, I offer that up to you, God. Isn't that a gorgeous, gorgeous thought? Now, the next song is a song that Michael Langford recently sent to me. And this is the song, it's called Be the One. And what this song is saying to me is, be that one that follows the way, even if all others abandon it, right? And don't let anything distract you or tempt you away from that narrow path. Be the one. Here we go. So we got to listen to a little bit of those two songs that really helped to emphasize this message. All right, guys, I'll be hanging around and listening. See you later.